You're listening to Decolonize Social Work, a conversation about social work, oppression, and liberation. I'm your co-host, Ondine.
And I'm your co-host, Drew.
All right. Well, hello.
Welcome
to
everyone.
The very first Decolonize Social Work
yes.
podcast. I'm Ondine.
I'm Drew.
Thank you guys for hanging out with us for a little while.
Yeah, thanks for giving us a shot.
So, Decolonize Social Work. Why did we choose this title and what the heck is this going to be about?
Yeah.
So, I'm a social worker.
Drew I'm a social worker.
Yep. And we want to have a conversation about the practice, why we do the things we do, why we do them the way that we do them, and whether or not, as a system here in the United States, social work is helping people or not helping people.
And I think it's also important as we talk about this, because we're kind of going into a territory, or we've chosen this territory to talk about, because we never really had a chance to talk about this,
right.
Either in maybe our professional organizations or when we were becoming social workers and getting bachelor's degrees or graduate degrees. Nobody really talks about this.
No. It was I remember a lot of it being very sort of rote knowledge stuff or theories,
yeah.
but not a lot of real reflective sort of, right. Is this the right thing to do?
Why do we do it this way?
Why do we do it like this?
Yeah. Who said that this was the best practice for this?
Yeah. So I think the purpose of this podcast is to sort of lend a critical eye or critical lens to social work practice in the United States. So we chose Decolonize Social Work. I really like the title too, because it's a bit of a call to action, and it also implies a kind of an ongoing process.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I like all that. I think that's a great introduction to why we chose this topic. I think going forward, as we talk about decolonizing social work, we want to make sure everybody's on board with some of the language we're going to be using. And so I just want to jump in for a second to talk about, or I guess define what we're going to, some terms that we're going to be using.
Yeah.
Jokingly, you could think about it back to your research class of operational definitions of some things, you know, just to kind of give you an understanding in case these words or these phrases are unfamiliar to you, just to, again, get you caught up real quick. not that you're going to have a full grasp of it, but you'll know what we're referring to when we use these words.
Yeah, it's one of my pet peeves in the field, right, when people use acronyms or language that doesn't really resonate with anybody, and then nobody thinks to say, hey, you know, that means this.
Right.
So we're going to do our best to do that. We may not always get it right. But let me start off with talking a little bit about how social work is going to be defined for the context of this podcast. It was interesting. I was sort of looking at some formal definitions of social work, doing a little research, and I did stumble across a journal article that was talking about how in the United States, there's not a one-stop shop, like, one size fits all, rather, definition of social work. They did a research study looking at all of the 50 states and DC, how the states defined social work practice, and that there were apparently a lot of similarities.
It's almost like an archipelago of social
differences.
Work.
Yeah. So, you know, for the United States, what I did do is I went to our professional organization, the National Association of Social Workers, or NASW, and this is what they say. So social work practice consists of the professional application of social work values, principles, and techniques to one or more of the following ends: helping people obtain tangible services, counseling and psychotherapy with individuals, families, and groups, helping communities or groups provide or improve social and health services, and participating in legislative processes. The practice of social work requires knowledge of human development and behavior, of social and economic and cultural institutions, and of the interaction of all these factors. God, that sounds textbooky.
That is textbook-y. A lofty definition.
Yeah, and it's a mouthful, and I'm not sure that coming out of this you have a better understanding. Maybe, I mean, I guess it was kind of specific about like psychotherapy and counseling and helping people get stuff.
You know what I like about that, though, is it kind of reminds me of my growth and understanding what social work is, because I think a lot of people, when they hear what social work is, think something like family intervention services or child protective services, but that covered a far wider scope than just those sorts of like
It did.
Personal service delivery or intervention service delivery and stuff. That was huge compared to what most people think of immediately when they hear social work.
I think you're right. And if I may, I went further and I looked at...
Do it.
Okay, thank you. You know, so that was like the National Association, like the United States definition, right? Well, there's also an International Federation of Social Workers.
It's different.
It is different. Wow. Yeah. In fact, each country usually has its own professional social work organization. But then the International Federation, people can be a part of that from all over.
Got it.
So I really like their definition of the profession.
Okay.
So I'm going to read that too.
All right.
Okay. So social work is a practice-based profession and an academic discipline that promotes social change and development, social cohesion, and the empowerment and liberation of people. Principles of social justice, human rights, collective responsibility, and respect for diversities are central to social work. Underpinned by theories of social work, social sciences, humanities, and indigenous knowledge, social work engages people and structures to address life challenges and enhance well-being. So,
again, I just gotta use this
big
word
picture
again,
stuff.
Lofty.
It's definitely aspirational.
It is aspirational. That's a great reframe for that.
Yeah, but what I like about the way the National Association, we might get into this later in a different podcast, you know, our code of ethics here in the United States does go into like social justice and value-based stuff. So I don't want you to think from these definitions that that's not present. But I do think I like the way the International Federation just comes full on
right.
out with this, like, yeah. It's about liberation and empowerment.
Right. It doesn't really leave you much room to question why you're doing social work.
Yeah.
Like, you're either in it for the fight or you're just against us, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So I think practically, again, for the purpose of this podcast, you know, those were some big operational definitions. So I'm just going to sum it up and say it's everything from case management to, like, community organizing, and right. we'll get into all those details.
Advocacy, policy,
yeah.
administration, things
yeah.
like that.
And I think, you know, our focus is going to be primarily the United States. That's where we live. That's where we work. That's what we know. Although I'm really interested in what other folks have to say about,
sure.
you know, what it looks like outside of the U.S. But I would be remiss if I did not also provide a definition, an operating definition of capitalism.
Right. Well,
given that's the economic
that's
system.
That's where we are. We are in capitalism.
We are in it. So, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, it's just an economic system. It's a political system. It's based on, you know, trade and industry, but basically, like, it's controlled by private owners for profit rather than the state.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the 1%, people making money, blah, blah, blah. That's sort of that's the condition in which we're working.
Right. And I think kind of going along with that idea of capitalism, I think a theme that you would see under a lot of the practices of capitalism, a theme that shows up a lot is exploitation.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because again, it's not everybody can have the same amount in capitalism. We have another word for that. but that's related, I think, to something else that I want to talk a little bit about, just to kind of give people an operating definition of, which is colonialism.
Mm.
Okay, so you might hear that and you think, you know, colonial Williamsburg and people walking around in triangle hats and like high socks and stuff, and it's like reenacting stuff. And it might be doing that, but that's like really a romantic version of what we're talking about here.
Super romantic.
Yeah, it's actually super sterilized.
Kind of terrible.
In a way, because colonialism, so I'm going to hit you with like the Merriam-Webster definition and
yeah,
a little bit about like what the what it kind of looks like in practice. But really simply, control by one power over a dependent area of people, or a policy advocating or based on such control. So basically, there's a power dichotomy of somebody trying to oppress or
yeah.
hold someone down. And I actually want to go a little bit further in that and talk about something called settler colonialism.
Ooh, bring it, bring it.
Right, and I might use this, and they're not interchangeable, but like colonialism was just, like I said, control of one person over another person, making them dependent
okay.
on the power holder. Whereas Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, in her book, The Indigenous People's History of the United States, I just want to read this quick sentence here that she talks about settler colonialism. She says, "Settler colonialism, as an institution or system, requires violence or the threat of violence to attain its goals."
Hmm.
the notion that settler indigenous conflict, again, talking about colonialism, you know, again, we associate it back to like settling this country when, you know, there were already people here. The notion that settler indigenous conflict is an inevitable product of cultural differences and misunderstandings blurs the nature of the historical process, because as people do not hand over their land, resources, or children and futures without a fight, and obviously that fight is met with violence. So there's a there's an inherent violence inflicted when colonialism is practiced. These are, you know, talking about the history of the United States, and it's like it being settled and created was physically violent, but there are also other types of violence when you talk about erasure of cultures, erasures of neighborhoods more modernly, you know, or more compactly, erasures of religious beliefs. And I think sometimes as social workers, because we often operate in a thing where we just need to check off boxes or there's a best way to do something, we might be erasing some people's cherished and very personal cultural beliefs, some of the, or some of their cultural practices, whether that is because they come from a different part of the world or they just come from a different neighborhood in our city.
Yeah, so like what you're talking about has me thinking about like how does white supremacy then fit into this?
So white supremacy as not just, we're not talking about Nazis and KKK.
Which we may later.
But I really think of like, think about it like white supremacy culture. Like there's a lot of different cultures existing in one place within the United States. White supremacy culture, it is a term that refers to the fact that the norms are set by white culture. The white culture is the supreme culture. And so therefore you kind of see it. And I'm being very like reductive and simplified with this definition. There are plenty of people smarter than me have written about it. But just so you understand like what we're talking about when we're saying like white supremacy culture, or colonialism. And again, and that's not to say that inherently, well, actually, I'm not going to go there yet because that's another...
Connect a couple dots for me, if you will, just like around like, okay, so we've got, we're talking about white supremacy, we're talking about settler colonialism. Why the heck would we talk about that when we're talking about social work again?
Well, so kind of going back to why we chose this in the first place, this is a majority white country. And when we're where we live, most of the people who are social workers are white. It's hard to grow up in a place as a white person in a culture that practices white supremacy and not see how those norms are informed by a history of violent colonialism, of exploitation, of not just because of colonialism, but also because industry, like related forms of economic systems like capitalism. So all this comes back to like, well, why is social work in need of this? And I think part of it is because if you look at like whether it was medicine or whether it was psychology or anything else, most of these things that we that started about 100 years ago or later were started by white people.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just the way the country had been shaped.
Or white people like stormed in and decided like this other way of doing things is not sufficient.
And actually we're coming in and we've got the right way for you to do it. And again, it's easy to imagine that happening in the past, but I think one of the things to talk about and why we're decolonizing social work is one, asking the question, are we still doing this? And then two, if we're even suspect of still doing this, what can we do to change the practice of social work so that we're not continuing to do this? Because I think in any case, it is harmful to people. I mean, there's just plenty of historical evidence for that.
Well, and I think I just want to say for the folks who are listening, like, you know, my intent with this podcast is to approach it with like extreme humility. I'm a learner.
Likewise,
we're not experts here, right? We are just trying to open up a space to have the conversation, and we want to hear from lots of folks. That's I think the other thing I'll say is that who is this podcast for? Well, it's for anybody who's interested in the topic. You know, I certainly hope that social workers will tune in and you know, also do some critical reflection and share opinions, and this can become a dialogue within the profession. But, you know, if you care at all about like collective liberation, you might get something out of this podcast.
And I think even beyond just service providers or social workers. Like, there are plenty of people who work for private businesses that provide services to people, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a landlord. Like, the things we're talking about, again, as favorite research term, they're generalizable.
Yeah.
So again, the terms and the concepts we're talking about, yeah, we're fitting it into a context of social work, but they can go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, why, I mean, we framed up for you why this conversation right. feels important, but why do we personally care? Why do you care?
Why do you care?
You did beat me to it. Oh God. So why do I care? Well, it sounds kind of contrived, but I think it's in my DNA to care about this. So in terms of like the identities I hold, which I think it's important to name those because yeah. it informs like how I look at the world and sort of my
experience.
They
also can't look at us.
And they can't see yeah. me. And there's that.
Yeah.
So I am, I identify as a queer woman of color, specifically Latinx, with Cuban and Irish heritage. My mom is from Cuba. She's an immigrant to this country. And so, you know, all of the history of, you know, that process and just what that was like and a lot of trauma and a lot of discrimination and language barriers and all of that, like, informs sort of how I move through the world. And then my father is a white American with Irish descent. So, you know, moving in both of these spaces, I used to think of, I still think of myself this way. When I was in undergrad, I read Borderlands or La Frontera by Gloria Anzaldúa.
Excellent book.
It's wonderful. Yeah, if you haven't read it, amazing. I really highly recommend it. And what really spoke to me about her work was talking about having kind of a borderland identity, a place where you don't quite fit in anywhere, but where you can easily step in and out, and sometimes not so easily step in and out. So that has really informed how I move through the world. And it's been interesting and it's been painful, wow. right?
Yeah.
I also grew up without any money. We didn't have any like real resources. So kind of you grow up in poverty and there's that. And then being like a, you know, woman identified person and a person who's perceived as being a woman. So a lot of the discrimination and sexual harassment and stuff I faced from that, just all of that kind of led me to the feeling like, gosh, I have all this anger and all this rage. And I also have this real deep empathy and compassion for humans.
Right.
And I want to do something about that. And that's sort of what drew me into my professional work, which ended up with me getting a degree in social work. And so like I bring all of this sort of personal experience with me, and I don't want to be a part of, I believe in the social work profession, but I don't want to be a part of something. I don't want to be complicit, right? And like,
right. Gosh, I remember in a different lifetime, I transcribed videos professionally, and there was a doctor who was talking about his mission as a psychologist, and he said, like, his job was not to make people okay with oppression just so that they could live a little healthier. His job was to help them overcome oppression
yes.
and by removing those boundaries
yes,
that
right?
kept them in there. And I've thought about that. You know, it was funny because I hated that job. And it was a like 3-minute video of him, and there was music playing over it, and it was hard to hear, so I was struggling a lot. But I always remember that statement. It's like, I'm not here to make people more comfortable living in oppression.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that sums up social work for me completely.
That's beautiful. I yeah. love that. You know, it's like, and it's hard to navigate that terrain, you know, where like, I also need a paycheck, right? Like I have to pay
right.
my rent and I
going
have to
back
like,
to your capitalism
I go,
early,
right, go
right?
back to living yeah. under capitalism. And
yeah.
so, you know, I have to reconcile like that tension all the time around like, this is what I have to do for my job, but this is what my higher ethics tell me to do. And just, you know, I think, you know, that's part of why I'm here and why I care about this. I have in my professional work, I've been a community organizer for over a decade. I've worked with, you know, really hyper local campaigns all the way built out onto some national campaign stuff. I've worked, you know, with folks living with HIV, I've done like case management kind of social work practice. And then for several years now too, I've worked in sort of the abortion access field, if you will.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the work I do also is really addresses like speaking truth to power, if you yeah. will, and like giving people, you know, removing obstacles for people to get what they need. And I really want people to self-determine and live autonomously. Yeah. I feel like I'm straying
okay.
a little.
I've quoted a couple of people, but I'm also going to quote you right now, because there was a conversation you and I were having just describing social work. And you said it was a perfect professional fit for your personal politics.
Yeah, that's right. I did say
you
that.
Did say
I did
that.
Say, I think
I know,
it's like
I,
a.
I've thought about it a lot. And I was just like, God,
yeah.
That was succinct.
I think it was a professional home for my. Yeah, it was.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was about the hit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, so
but
thank
you. Describing that, I think, it sums it up beautifully. Like,
thank you.
How you come to social work.
Yeah. I mean, I really feel like if you're looking at, as far as professions go and titles and whatnot, like, this social work, if you, you know, is where I need to be, but I need social work to not be crappy,
yeah.
right?
I think other people who depend on social workers need it to not be crappy,
not
too.
Not to be crappy, too, and be liberatory. Like, yeah. I think we need to be building on, we need to be building something beautiful together,
yeah.
and we don't do that when we just perpetuate power structures that are terrible and, like, you know, unequal and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, why do you care about this?
Well, I will gladly share why I care about it, but I'm just going to, well, I tell you what, I will tell you why I'm going to care about it, but I'm going to come back to you in a second.
Okay.
Because
fair enough.
Why I care about it, I don't want to repeat everything you said, because it did apply to me, but the thing that doesn't apply to me is I kind of come from an opposite end of the spectrum. Talking about identities, my identity, I have a pretty strong white identity,
mm.
not just ancestrally, but like I accept, you know, my whiteness. I am white in America.
Mm-hmm.
My family, you know, from 2 to 4 generations back descends from immigrants of Scotland, England, and Germany. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when I say white, like,
it's like
we're
the
talking
whitest
about
like, is like some ivory shit.
Yeah, it is ivory. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be any whiter. If it was any whiter, I'd be a ghost. But, you know, and so I have come in that journey of, like, growing up in a culture of white supremacy, of just accepting that, like, if I'm doing it, it must be the norm. If I'm doing it, everybody must do it. You're not
mm-hmm.
really trained. As a white person growing up in the United States, I'm pretty sure almost all of us are not trained to kind of question why we do the things we do. Just because the people that set the rules look just like us.
Yeah.
They're actless like us. And there's not really a dialogue or a discussion about actually why was it us that decided how to do these things?
Right. Why is this normal?
Right. Why is this normal? And then why do we get mad at people who aren't white? Because we think they can't act quote unquote normal.
Right.
That's where like colonialism comes in. That's where like white supremacy comes in, where it's just like, well, you either create a system that people have to assimilate to the values of a culture, i.e. white supremacy,
mm-hmm.
or they're relegated to, the bottom rungs of society.
Yeah.
And barriers are created institutionally to keep them there. So all of this is to say that I, you know, even though I grew up in Eastern Kentucky, I've lived in Kentucky nearly my whole life, and it's a really white place here. And I, like I said, I'm super white. Yet it also, there's a responsibility of white people to address this.
Mm.
Social work was started, at least as a recognized profession, by white people, even
yeah.
though, you know, and this is another podcast, but episode, but maybe social work existed in other ways. It's just, again, the colonialism of claiming it first, or colonial practice of claiming it first.
Right, right. Columbusing social work, perhaps?
Exactly. Yeah, right. So that's how I come to it, because I'm like, this is not the best that white people can do.
Mm-hmm.
There is definitely room for improvement. There has to be room for improvement. And I don't think non-white people, like whether they're black people or brown people or immigrants, need saving. I think they need the barriers removed so that they can plenty save themselves. Because, I mean, the fact that these communities that still exist show that they are capable of surviving and saving themselves.
Yeah, it takes a lot of, like, personal power to do that. You know, I've heard of, like, some really good critiques of empowerment language, right?
So,
we don't need to empower people.
Yeah.
Like you said, we just need to, like, take the stuff away.
Yeah, we need to remove the systems that are built to keep them
yeah.
from being able to realize or self-determine or actualize their best selves or their
yeah.
best lives. So that's my motivation for this and coming to this social work podcast. The thing that I was going to ask you, though, before I started talking about that, though, because we're, like, hitting, like, the heavy hits with this, we're doing this, right? But, like...
Yeah, okay.
What?
Well, I don't know. I kind of wanted you to share a little bit about, like, some of the work you've done.
Oh, right. I didn't even talk about that, right? So, yeah, professionally, what I've done, for the past few years, I've worked at a civil rights office here in Kentucky that address or provides assistance to people who have been victims of housing discrimination. So civil rights stuff, doing a lot of trainings for landlords to kind of help them. Which, you know, that's a lot of power, right?
Yeah.
And it, not unlike social workers who have a lot of power over somebody's livelihood. And it's hard work.
Yeah.
I've also done, the past couple of years, been involved in the development of an intervention program for perpetrators of domestic violence, kind of designing curriculum and I guess you could call it a diversion program to help improve the, help reduce the risk of recidivism.
Got
or
it.
The chances that somebody who has been a domestic violence offender or interpersonal violence offender will do it again in the future.
Got it.
And sometimes these are even courses that people can take in lieu of maybe being sentenced and going to jail or prison, where they're not going to get any kind of, I guess, education or practice or around the why they did this. So that's really what I've been up to. And then again, also, I'm a social worker, which is, again, we talked about this in the beginning. I got a social work education, but do I think it was complete? I don't. I think there was something missing in it. And I hope that's what we get to in this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it. I'm coming at you now. So we're talking about the heavy stuff. And I want to know, like, what do you do when you're not doing the social work, when you're not doing the work? You got some fun stuff. I know you do. You want to share a little bit about, like, what keeps you busy when you're decompressing, when that self-care stuff we talk so much about?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I no one could see this. I rolled my eyes because I do believe very deeply that we should take good care of ourselves. But you know, I think sometimes that self-care gets thrown around.
Well, it's got to be intentional.
It's got to be intentional. So what do I do to give me life? Well, one thing I like to do is I have a really, really old synthesizer, and I like to sit around and make electronic music that makes me happy.
Music. I love it.
I appreciate that. You know, and I make it just for me, so it doesn't matter if anybody likes it, but it's a really nice part of my brain to get into that I really enjoy. And then, I read a lot of fiction. I hang out with pets. I really, really like the Star Trek franchise, and so Deep Space Nine is my favorite. I will watch that over and over, although right now I'm making my way back through Star Trek Voyager.
Making your way back?
I mean,
have you seen it? I mean, there's a funny joke about Voyager going back home, right?
Yeah. Don't spoiler alert for anybody who's...
That's the plot. They're just trying to get home. That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
I have seen...
Seen it before.
I have seen it before. I don't think I saw it totally to the end.
Yeah.
But I am revisiting Voyager. What about you, Drew? Let's turn it on.
What do
I
do?
What do you do?
I tell you, this makes me sound super nerdy, and you probably understand why I don't leave the house much. But I really enjoy doing New York Times crosswords.
Those are hard.
They are my enjoyment of them subsides the longer the week goes on, because they get harder. Like as you get closer to Saturday. But I like it. It's challenging. I think that's what's going to keep me from losing my edge, which is ridiculous to say. But then I also, you know, I'm not going to lie, I really love just sitting at home and baking really simple things like, you know, cookies and so forth. I mean, as I'm talking about this, I do crosswords and love baking. I think if there's a senior citizen dating app, I should be on there in a couple of years, because my interests are going to probably get me a lot of matches.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No
shame.
I got plenty of years to practice. But, so, you know, that's what I do. I also love hanging out with pets. We'll probably share some more quirks about us, but I really just like that because, you know, people say like, oh, why are you so serious about it? Why you got to take everything so serious? Is like, I don't take myself seriously,
but I
take social justice very seriously. I'm serious about that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just like the kind of develop the layers that we are as we're talking about this, that we're not just like hard asses. We're not just mean people trying to tell everybody they're doing it wrong.
Yeah, we're not. We're critical in a healthy way, but we are. We're fun.
We're fun, and we're going through this just with you, the listener, our noble listener, who has taken up the charge to learn with us as we examine what it might look like to decolonize social work.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have this conversation.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's our last track on this album. So yep. How are you feeling? All right?
I'm feeling good.
Okay. Well, we're going to leave you all with that. And look out for our next episode.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to Decolonize Social Work, a podcast about social work, oppression, and liberation. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud at Decolonize SW, and on Instagram at Decolonize Social Work.